Thank you. some of the top I could in the diet I go with the all glazed with some of the weapons, all glazed with some of the all glazed with some of the weapons. I wish she knew she rolled up all glazed.
Yeah.
translation. The intelligent who have understood the Supreme Lord in association with pure devotees and have become freed from bad materialistic association can never avoid hearing the glories of the Lord, even though they have heard them only once. How then could the Pandavas tolerate his separation? For they had been intimately associated with his person, seeing him face to face, touching him, conversing with him, and sleeping, sitting, and dining with him. Report. The living being's constitutional position is one of serving a superior. He is obliged to serve by force the dictates of illusory material energy in different phases of sense gratification. And in serving the senses, he is never tired. Even though he may be tired, the illusory energy perpetually forces him to do so without being satisfied. There's no end to such sense gratificatory business, and the conditioned soul becomes entangled in such servitude without hope of release. The release is only effected by association with pure devotees. By such association, one is gradually promoted to his transcendental consciousness. Thus he can know that his eternal position is to render service unto the Lord and not to these perverted senses in the capacity of lust, anger, desire to lord it over, etc. Material society, friendship, and love are all different phases of lust. Home, country, family, society, wealth, and all sorts of corollaries are all causes of bondage in the material world, for the threefold miseries of life are concomitant factors. By associating with pure devotees and by hearing them submissively, attachment for material enjoyment becomes slackened, and attraction for hearing about the transcendental activities of the Lord becomes prominent. Once they are, they will go on progressively without stoppage, like fire and gunpowder. It is said that Hari, the personality of Godhead, is so transcendentally attractive that even those who are self-satisfied by self-realization and are factually liberated from all material bondage can also become devotees of the Lord. Under the circumstances, it is easily understood what must have been the position of the Pandavas, who are constant companions of the Lord. They could not even think of separation from Sri Krishna, since the attraction was more intense for them because of continuous personal contact. His remembrance by his form, quality, name, fame, pastimes, etc., is also attractive for the pure devotee, so much so that he forgets all forms, quality, name, fame, and activities of the mundane world. And due to his mature association with pure devotees, he is not out of contact with the Lord for a moment. So here a question is then being asked, how the Pandavas could tolerate separation from Lord Krishna, since this was a very difficult situation. It was understood. It means these questions will arise because there is either experience or knowledge of the facts. Right? Someone who knows this particular situation and has experience, then they know what someone else will be experiencing. Right? That basically it's the same. There's no difference. When one person gets out of a situation, when another person gets it, it's basically the same. You know, there's not really much difference. You know, otherwise, how is it that we can give a rasgulla to everyone here and then ask everyone what taste is it, and they'll all say sweet? Because the basic principle would be the same. So the sages we see who are questioning are very highly qualified because they can understand what the Pandavas must be going through. Because they see that the Pandavas are always associating with the Lord, and now when the Lord goes, that separation must be very great for them. Right? For somebody who's occasionally with someone, the separation is also felt, but because it's not continuous, the intensity or the depth is not as much, or it doesn't last as long. It's not as difficult a situation. But we see then the Pandavas, their separation would be the greatest because they're always with Krishna. So this point was being brought up. So how are they able to tolerate? This is the question, which will be then answered later, or just the point is being made. So in the purport, Prabhupada brings out the point, the entity's constitutional position is serving a superior. This is the way the living entity works. This is the construction, you could say, of the living entity. Right? We may have so many ideas of what we are or what we will become, but this is the basic principle that always remains. We are servant of the superior. That's always going to be there. Doesn't matter what our position, who we become, where we go in the spiritual world, what pastime, what rasa. This one point will always remain. Jiva Sarupoi, Krishna, Nitya Das. That the servant aspect is what actually makes us who we are. Right? That is the underlying principle. So then it's like, okay, that's very basic, yes, okay. But this is not basic, this is fundamental. This is a very important aspect that the Vedic culture offers. Is conclusion is fundamental. While basics just means kind of like general knowledge that without it, you can't learn other details, right? You learn some primary details or concepts so that you can go on and learn further, more complex details. But the Vedic idea is what's basic is not where you start. You start from fundamental. Fundamental is actually what makes the whole thing work. So the fundamentals synthesize every aspect of the detail of a subject. Right? It means every subject, every aspect of a particular subject can find its resting place in the principle. So if you know the principle, then you can say you actually know the subject. Then depending upon your capacity, you'll learn more and more of detail. Right? This is, so everybody's individual. Not that when you've learned great detail, then they may reveal to you the concepts and the fundamentals that it's based on. That's not the Vedic system doesn't do like. We get right to the essence, right? When we first preach it, we tell someone, you're not this body, we're servant of Krishna. Developing love of Godhead, that's the ultimate goal. These are fundamentals. They always remain, right? Detail changes. This is how you can tell the difference. The detail will change according to time, place, and circumstance. Fundamentals don't change. It doesn't matter what is the time, place, or circumstance. They'll always remain, right? Like, you're always going to eat. Right? Now, where you are, what's the situation, may vary what you will eat, or the quantity you will eat. But eating will go on. Right? So that's how it works. So we see that this is a fundamental, it's not a basic. Right? For lack of better understanding, then we'll call it basic. But this, being understanding we're servant, that's where we start to kind of get the neophyte inspired to not lord it over. But it's actually only the Uttam Adhikari can actually understand what it means to be servant. Right? Because they do this. Right? The living entity is Satchidananda. So that means he is happy. He is in, it means basically happiness and the living entity. It's not different. You can't separate. You can't separate because that's what he's made out of. So now the question is happiness will be there. Now it's a question of how happiness will be gained. This then becomes a very important principle. Is how is the living entity going to be happy, since happiness is his nature? This is the point, because we see in the material world everyone's miserable. Occasionally some happiness, but basically miserable. Right? You ask everyone, how are you doing? Okay. You know, I said this morning, I met Mara, I said, fair to Midland. I was trying to figure out, you know, fair to Midland. It's like one lower and one's higher. She says, no, they're about the same. Things is kind of middle of the road, not going. You know, just, you know, Bengali say, moto moti, you know, it's kind of the same. You know, not dying, but, you know, no ecstasy, you know, like that. So that's, you know, if things are going good, that's okay, you know. If you're like that, you're happy. No problems, life goes on. It's good, it's okay, it's good. Not if you can be happy on top of that, great. But, you know, you'd rather be just little, you know, kind of okay than unhappy. Right? So that means that every living entity in the material world is doing something fundamentally wrong in their life, that they're not happy. Right? This is what we can gain from this. Is that they're not acting according to their nature, that's why they're not happy. In the spiritual world, they're happy. Krishna is happy because they're acting according to their nature. So this is the principle. One is in a position of serving a superior. This is always there. Das anu das. We're always serving, servant of the servant to the servant of the servant. This is our position. Now, it is thought, this is a fallacious concept that the living entity has. And it's only in the material world they have it. Right? No one else has this idea. In the spiritual world, they don't have this idea. The idea is that if you're served, you're happy. Right? That's the principle we function on. That's why in the material world, we try to be served, not serve. Right? Or we'll only serve because we know that will get us service. Right? We do something and then we'll get something. Right? You know, you pat the kid on the head, then they'll smile at you. You know, you get paid for the patting on the head. You know, you do something, you'll get something back from it. Right? This is what goes on. This is material relationships. Religious material relationships means you're paying what is due for what you'll get back. Irreligion means you're trying to get what you figure you're due without giving what you are, what you owe to the other person for reciprocating in the way you expect them to. Right? So this is the difficulty. The living entity is trying to get happy by being served. So we don't mind putting in a little service, but then we expect that to kickstart something, like a perpetual motion machine. We'll give the first push, but then forever it should go on, we're being served. You know? But it doesn't work like that. So, but now we see Krishna, now we look at Krishna as being served. And he's happy, right? He's the one that we get this idea from. We observe Krishna, and we say, hey, he's happy. He's being served. So that must be where it's at. Right? I'm serving, I'm happy. But everyone's serving him, so he's more happy. That's our idea. But now, when this will be a great idea if one, it worked, you know, and two, Krishna didn't come as Lord Chaitanya. Right? So from these two we can understand, hey, something's wrong with this concept. Because we're trying it, it's not working. And second, God himself comes as a servant to taste ecstasy. Because he's not tasting it in such a proportion as being served. Does this make some sense? The idea? Because this is really a, how do you say, not to belabor a word, but this is a real fundamental point, is that we, our whole existence is based on the idea that if we're served, we're going to be happy. You know? Or we'll serve, we don't mind, but we're going to be happy by what we get in return for that service. Right? So it's either business or hedonism, right? Neither are considered, you know, so great. So now Krishna, now we have to look at it. Then from this, then we can see is that, well, but at the same time, Krishna is getting happiness. So how would he be getting happiness being served? If to go to a higher level, he has to come as his own devotee. So now, then one sees is that that happiness comes from serving. Right? So there's a whole dynamic that goes on in the spiritual world that basically we're unaware of, because we have our own idea, right? It means we're very intelligent, very qualified, and we have thought up this very unique idea that we should be served, right? No one else in the material world has this idea. And then by following it, we're going to be happy. But strangely enough, everybody else is trying it, and you know, you'd think, right? It means like, let's say, you're going somewhere, you've heard about some program, and somebody's coming out of the program, you know, how did it go? Oh, it's terrible. You know, you put it out, you know, but then a few more people come out, and they go, it's terrible. And then, if you go inside, and everybody inside is not happy, and they're all saying, yeah, this is terrible, what would you do? Right? You just leave. But that's what's going on here, and we're not leaving. We're unhappy, everyone else is unhappy, everyone we talk to is unhappy, but somehow or another we're still inspired that, well, maybe, you know, all 6 billion of us here on the planet, we just didn't quite do it this way. You know, you just move it a little bit, you know, just adjust it quite like this, you know, and then it'll be great. So Krishna, he is actually, the interaction with his devotees is he, if you look at it, okay, let us look at this. You have somebody. You have a kid, you have an adult. The adult says something funny. The kid laughs. Right? It's considered a nice reciprocation. What if the adult said something, the kid just sat there deadpan? Right? Didn't react. Would the adult be inspired to say something more? No, then he'll try another act. Right? Okay, happy didn't work. Oh, it's something wrong, and this and that. Then you expect some reaction, right? A tear, or, you know, some kind of emotion, or still nothing. You know? Then, you know, you try some different approach. You know, you might get upset, you know, still nothing. You know, probably by this time you go over to check if the kid wasn't a diorama or something, right? You know what I'm saying? So this is the thing. The actor gets on the stage. They act, right? And if the audience just sits there and just stares, there's no inspiration, right? The actor can do that. But the audience should respond. Are we starting to see the idea? So Krishna does something, and the devotees respond. That's his happiness. You understand? Our happiness is we say something, the kid responds. The kid is the one who enjoyed it. We get this point? In other words, the heart concept of what is happiness is completely backwards from what the reality is. We've taken it, God's enjoyment. Well, his enjoyment is seeing the devotee's enjoyment. That's why he comes as Lord Chaitanya. What is that enjoyment? Because his enjoyment is just seeing that others are enjoying. Does this make some sense? I mean, it may be difficult because it's something we haven't thought about since unlimited lifetimes that we've been here in the material world. Right? So that's the principle. It's by serving we become happy. When we see the other person happy, that's when we become happy. That's the whole point. So it's not that we should be serving with an expectation of return. No, if we just serve, we will be happy. We shouldn't decide, because what we do is, we'll be happy, is we've served, we get some response from that service, we're happy. But then we expect something else to happen. So that something else, that's where our illusion is coming. Right? Cook something nice, all the devotees say, yeah, that was great. Okay, now that, okay, now you're happy that others are happy. But then that praise, then we expect every time that they see us, oh, that was a great feast, and even 10 years later, you know, we should be. Or because it was great, now we should get some facility for that, or some recognition for that, or, you know, some opulence should come from that. Does that make some sense? So there's still something more. So that's the point, is for Krishna, he's not looking for that something more. So it's just a constant interaction. He's surrounded by devotees. He's acting in ways that brings out from them a response according to their relationship with him. And their responding in that way is greater. Therefore, it's said that the devotees, their happiness, seeing Krishna happy, is a million times greater. Sometimes it's a million, sometimes it's 10,000, whatever. It's definitely exponentially greater, right? You have to do more than arithmetic to calculate how much greater is the happiness, right? So that's the principle. And it's Krishna, but seeing Krishna happy is because they're happy. That's why it says that transcendental competition. The Lord does something, it makes the devotee happy. Seeing the devotee happy, that's when Krishna becomes happy. Then the devotee, means the devotee will respond, Krishna becomes happy. That Krishna's happiness becomes the devotee's happiness. Does that make sense? So, unfortunately, it's basically backwards from whatever we've been doing since time immemorial. We'll use it. We can't function without it because this is how we're built. But the problem is we don't focus. This is actually where the action is. We think the action is going to be a result of this. No, the taste of the rasa, that's the thing. Facility and other material opulences, that's not the thing. Right? If it was the thing, then Vrindavan would be glorified as the most opulent place. Right? But no, we glorify Vaikuntha as the most opulent place. We glorify Vrindavan for rasa. Because Vaikuntha is so opulent, the amount of jewels and precious, you know, stones and metals and the architecture and everything is unlimitedly beautiful and opulent. But all that opulence comes out of the dust of Vrindavan. Right? Vrindavan is just dust. It's on the ground. It's just dust. Because opulence isn't what they're looking for. Opulence is there. Greater opulence is there even than in Vaikuntha. But that's not what's noted. What's noted is the exchange. So exchange is where taste is. So that's the point. Many times we are willing to break down or have a bad exchange to get a facility, to get something. But actually the exchange is what's important. Does that make sense? There's something. So we're taking it that the side effects of rasa are what we're trying to get. But it's not the facilities of rasa. Right? Just like, let's say you want to have family, you want to taste parental rasa. So then that means you need a house, you need money, you need facilities, you need whatever would go on. You need a kitchen, you need a bathroom, you need bedrooms, you need living rooms, you need facilities for social interaction, dealing with the family members, you know, the safety of the family members, the health of the family. You need so much facility. So generally, if we see people are focusing on that, and sometimes to the exclusion of the taste of the interaction between family members. Does that make sense? You know, I mean, it's good business. Somebody's making a buck off of this foolishness. And that's why they're doing it. Right? They know you need this. So therefore, they focus on the facilities. They don't show the emotions or that. They used to. They used to do the old commercials, you know, you see smiling kids, smiling parents. No. Now it's all, you know, tough, cold, cool, you know, collective, together, no nonsense. You know, it's just on what they got. It's not the interaction. Right? Interaction is considered, you know, too sentimental. You know, it's not nice. So this is the thing, because if it's just the sentiment, you could be happy without the Ray-Ban sunglasses. You know, without the computer, without the television, without the rug, without the car. You know, without the new Teflon non-stick pan, you could be happy. Because a lot of people are. Right? Even you're going to tell me that all the people in Africa are miserable because they don't have the latest non-stick Teflon pan, or they don't have the latest ab cruncher. Right? You know, so, you know what I'm saying? So that's the point. They have to make it that without this, you are suffering. Not only are you suffering, socially you're so out of it, I don't even know why even people would even recognize your existence. You know? So this is a trick. It's a business trick, right? It's an advertising trick. Like that. Simply how to make you feel bad that you're not have more material facilities. And that will create the platform of your prestige, which is another opulence. Then you'll be happy. Rather than you'll be happy by interacting with people. And then these things come as a side. Right? Means, what is his name? Not the Anthony, I guess Anthony. Who was the other guy before Anthony? She's been around a while. Caesar. Yeah. Okay, so Caesar, okay. Now, what he experiences interacting with Cleopatra, one of his citizens also experiences the nice interaction. His citizen also, between him and his wife, they have the same feelings. But on top of that, Caesar gets the benefit of being Caesar, right? You know, he's the boss. So he gets that plus that opulence. But the actual taste in rasa is no greater. It's not that Caesar and Cleopatra taste something more in the conjugal relationship than his servant with the servant's wife. No difference. Just that you add that prestige. But what's been made is it's turned around. We think it's only if you're Caesar, then you'll really enjoy. No. Doesn't work like that. Otherwise, how do dogs in the street? They don't have anything. You know? Okay, no, okay, they, you know, what do you call it? Initialize this particular area here, so it's theirs, you know, so then they can feel, yes, you're special. Anyone comes here, then we'll bark at them. But otherwise, then, no. So these things are illusions that we fall prey to easily. That's the thing. The businessmen find the weak points. They know where are the needs, and therefore, where are the weak points where they can push on that and get what they want. You know? I mean, it's a common thing. Business people figure that out. Kids figure it out. The women figure it out. The men are the idiots. Right? So, that's the principle, is that we're trying to understand that this concept of the masculine principle, that I am the controller and enjoyer, does not give us happiness. For Krishna, it's only a principle that he will enjoy that someone else is happy, that someone else is responding to him in relationship. Right? He is Atmarama. He expands relationships to expand the taste of rasa. Right? So that taste, that's what makes it nice. It's not other things. So this is gained by serving, and serving is superior. Because the superior means they're farther, they're closer to Krishna. They are serving, they're superior, they're serving like this until it gets back to the Lord's associates. So Lord's associates, they're the ones that directly interact with Krishna. And so, so we're always serving the servants of them. So therefore the question comes up, here is the end of the line. Arjuna is the direct associate of Krishna. So how are they tolerating? You know, we're way back. Like, they're right in the front. Right? Arjuna is direct. Narayana Rishi. Krishna and Arjuna are never separated. They're always together in some pastime. They're always going on. So then the question that comes up is, how are they tolerating? Because it's such the... How do you say, the separation must be so great because the intensity of interaction is so great. Does this make sense? So this is the point, is that by associating with the devotees, then we can give up the attachment for the material energy and start to get it for Krishna. But that's only going to come if we give up the desire to control the material energy. Right? Means attachment is lust. We desire, we want something. Right? Means one does an activity based on two principles. One of two principles. Either love for Krishna or lust for material enjoyment. That's the foundation of everything. So the more desire you have, that's the more lust. It means it could be in anything. You know, you want a new watch, a new car, a new bicycle, or do anything. Or, you know, your attachment to those things. So the more there is, that's the more lust is there. The less attachment, the less lust. But still, in the material context, you don't have no lust. Only if you come into the realm of bhakti, then you get rid of everything. Or you go from neutral to positive. We can't stay at neutral, because Satchitananda, the living entity, has to be in the positive. Has to be happy. So just having no lust is not enough. You have to have love. Otherwise, so for a short time one can stay in that gap in between. That gap's called Brahma Bhuta. Then one has to move into a prema. So by associating with the devotees, then we learn we are servant. When we are servant, then we can start picking up on the mood that they have of not being attached to material energy, but attached to Krishna. So that's where then our happiness begins. Right? Does this make sense? Any questions on this? Comments? Yes.
Prabhupada is saying, can we then infer that for the jiva soul, Atma Rama is not possible?
Oh, can we infer from this that the jiva soul, Atma Rama, is not possible? Means. It is, Atmarama is possible, but the definition of it has to be understood. Just like there's always different, anything, like you say, happiness, there's different forms of happiness. You know, it's just like you have the eight Astasatvika Bhavas, that's different manifestation of it. You have Santri Bhavas, you have Sky Bhava, you have so many different things. So in the same ways, Atmarama would have to be defined. Atmarama meaning that there's no need of material facility, position, and enjoyment, anything to do with material energy. So therefore, one is satisfied in the Atma, one is enjoying in the Atma. So that is would be the lower level of that definition, meaning that there's no need of the material energy, so you're satisfied in the self. But then if you take it farther, what is that self? And that self is coming from the Supreme Self. So Atmarama means one who is happy in the self, meaning the supreme self, Krishna. So that's why it mentions here that they can never avoid hearing the glories of the Lord. So that's actually the Atmaram. So they've gone through that. It means they've gone through liberation to the positive. Yeah, otherwise Atmarama is, yeah, the point is it's the person. Now Krishna's Atmarama means he himself, since he is everything, he's satisfied in himself. Right? So that's why, so that's the basis of happiness, is satisfaction. That's why in the material world, even if you want material happiness, you have to be satisfied. Otherwise you can never be happy. It means if what you have, you're satisfied, you'll be happy. Because unhappiness comes when there's something you need you don't have. Right? That's the difficulty. And you can compound that problem by being dependent on others arranging that happiness for you. Right? Then you compound your misery. Yeah. So when that's removed, then there's none. So Krishna doesn't have any need. He is himself. He's satisfied himself. So in the material world, if we're satisfied, we're happy. But there's something more. Being satisfied isn't enough. That's why we're satisfied, but we want to be happy. Does that make sense? So the point is from satisfaction, then we should move towards happiness, which means service. But generally what we do is we're not satisfied because facility in that, we want more and more and more. And at the same time as we're not happy because we try to do it without service. Or our service is just to start someone doing something. You know what I'm saying? Like you have Aikido. You don't attack anyone. Right? It moves on. The person's energy comes to you and you become the center of that and you move it where you please. But if someone doesn't attack you, then you feign an attack to start them moving. And once they start to move, then you take that and do what you want. Does that make some sense? So then that principle is there, is that the material world, we may serve, but it's only to start the other person doing some activity, then we can take it and do what we want and enjoy it. You know, same principle, we make ourselves the center. And then enjoy. But the problem is because they're using the same thing and making themselves the center, then it doesn't work. You know, you can only have one center. To have something only turns on one center, can't have two centers to turn. You know, unless one is the main center. One can be turning and going around the bigger one. You know, like the sun can be moving, but that's going around the earth. You know. So then can work, but still one of them has to be the primary center. So that's the difficulty, is that our system that we have made is wrong, our method is wrong. So Krishna's Atmarama, because he is everything, we're not everything. We're only a part. And we're designed to take part, and we are expansions of rasa. It's just like you have a musical instrument. And it has the main playing strings and it has sympathetic strings. Those sympathetic strings will only play if they are in tune with the main string that's playing. They will never be played. So that's our position. Is the servants are played by Krishna. But the servants of the servants aren't played by Krishna. We assist the servants. And yes, so we resonate what they feel. And that resonate is more. It brings out a special taste that you don't get even in the mainstream. So it adds. That's who we are. So that's the point, is when Krishna does something, there is an ecstatic emotional reaction in the devotee. That's experienced by those serving them. That creates a further resonation. That expansion of that creates more happiness for Krishna. Because Krishna is more happy, that means then the person who is the one who experiences it becomes more happy again. That resonates even stronger in the next. It just keeps going and going and going. So that's the whole thing, is
the person becoming happy, that will create happiness in Krishna, but you add a resonance to it, it increases it more. So that means Krishna becomes happier faster, and the stages between go up faster. Right? So therefore, because the greater the margin, the greater the return. Right? So that principle is there. So because that, if you add into it servant of the servant, if you add a servant, it goes up in a certain increments. But you add servant of the servant, the increments become bigger. And you add more and more servant. You know, 1,000 times removed servant, as Lord Chaitanya said. Then the jump is so great. That's why in Braj, then, it's just liquid rasa. You know, it's such a different place. It's not, you know, all that clear cut, nice. It's just the rasa is so great that what's going on is the taste. If that's all it is like liquid there. The other one is ecstasy, but there it's like liquid. You're swimming in it. That's why it's always mentioned, swimming and diving. It's like being in that water of ecstasy. Does that make some sense? Someone asked this. Okay. So the question is how would Sukadeva Goswami, who didn't interact with his family, because as soon as he hit the ground, he ran, you know, so how would he be able to describe such intimate interactions of rasa, you know, without having had, you know, family experience? It's a nice idea, but unfortunately spiritual rasa is something different, as we were explaining before. What is the happiness? So because you have material experience doesn't necessarily mean you have any entrance at all into the spiritual rasa. Just like we see that in the conjugal rasa, the sahajas have the idea without you being in conjugal rasa, you can't experience or understand the conjugal rasa of the gopis. Unfortunately, our acharyas, the six Goswamis, have a different idea. It's only when you give up material conjugal engagements, then you can understand the transcendental conjugal rasa. Because it's different. They're not in it for their own senses. It's a whole different thing. The boy is touching the girl so that she has reactions. He enjoys that. The girl is touching the boy only to get him to touch her. So the boy's trying to control and enjoy the girl. The girl's trying to control the boy so that she can enjoy the girl, meaning herself. So it's a whole different thing. But the gopis aren't like that. They're not trying to enjoy themselves. They're trying to be the perfect response to Krishna's pastime. So it's very different. So there is the cultural aspect of that we can gain from here. Right? It means etiquette and all that, and culture as a medium for performing service, that we can appreciate. But the main point of knowing the culture is so that we, who have attachment to that culture, aren't distracted from our devotional service through the lack of that culture. Does that make sense? The living entity has a need for the social interaction of family life. Therefore, he engages in pious family life to get that taste. But that taste is something that, if it's done according to the proper rules and regulations, is something that can be connected to Krishna, so he doesn't lose out. He gets his own need, but he won't be distracted from taking. This is like this. Okay, give an example. Man comes to the temple, he doesn't follow one of the regulative principles. Which would be more important? You don't let him in the temple because he's too unqualified, you know, and until he follows the principles, you won't even deal with him. Or that he comes in, sits down, and takes prasad and hears the kirtan, even though practically, for as far as one who practices, he doesn't have any qualifications. Which would be better? Yes. So the second would be better because devotional service is another category. But because we're not in the category of devotional service, therefore the material endeavor for material perfection is part of our process of sadhana bhakti. It's not bhakti, but endeavoring for it to use it for Krishna, connect it to Krishna, that element only is the bhakti. The thing itself is not bhakti. So one could say, okay, so Varnashram would throw that out because it's not bhakti. But anything that's done on the conditioned platform is also in the same category as not bhakti. But trying to engage the conditioned nature in the Lord's service, that's bhakti. So then we naturally engage what we understand is the best. So to that degree of our understanding and realization, we engage that in the Lord's service. So that endeavor to engage, that's the devotion. Does that make sense? But the reason it's there is because we're conditioned. Otherwise, Krishna is not Krishna's first recommendation. His first recommendation is surrender this moment. Why bother with the illusion? Wake up, surrender, and then be engaged in transcendental rasa. If you can't do that, then follow the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti, which just means the form of rasa, but that's manifest in rules and regulations because we don't know what is rasa. Can't do that, then work for me. Then you start introducing, I have needs and desires, but they're minimal, so I can work for Krishna. I can do the work, and the results that come, just being engaged in that work is enough for me. The result I don't need. Right? I just interact with the people, but they're not mine. I'm not in control. But I deal with it. Like, I work in the treasury. Right? I have an inherent need for money. Okay? So, but the attachment for the money is so minimal that if I just go in and count money and move it around in the account, I'm satisfied. It's good enough for me. But it's not my money, and I'm not going to get any benefit from it. So that's working for Krishna. And then the next is, no, it's my money. You know, and I can chortle and gloat and pour it over my head and do all that because it's mine. You know, then I'll take part of it because I'm pious and good, and I'll give that to Krishna. That's then give the result. That's the fourth option. Right? So we see third and fourth are already taking into consideration the conditioned nature very seriously. Second already takes it, but from the minimal point. You know, you're still eating, you're sleeping, you need clothes, you need shelter. Does that make sense? So it has, the two have nothing to do with each other. Is that transcendental, I'm saying it is realization. So naturally, for us to be interested, we start from the material, then look at it, well, what's the proper thing? How do we engage in Krishna's service? Then we see Krishna. Or we see Krishna, then we engage that. But that's not the position. Plus, he was in the womb, he's interacting in the womb. And if you're liberated, you immediately understand what you're dealing with. You know? It's just like if you're sitting in the audience, then you're looking at the magician and it looks like some illusion you can't understand. But if you're backstage, then you can see that there's already a rabbit in the hat and, you know, all these things are already there. So there's no illusion. So he's liberated. Immediately he understands what's going on. Does that make sense? I mean, there is the other position that he did come from the spiritual world, so he knows what's going on there. But for argument's sake, as setting examples, acharya, you have to be able to substantiate his position from this black, from here. Then you add that to it, you know. But just take the atheistic position is broken down by logic, pratyaksha, from here. You have to take shabda, or the authority, and you have to give it in such a way that they can observe it. They can't observe the spiritual world, so you can't use that as an argument. If they have faith, then you say, oh, it's no problem, he's from the spiritual world. You know. That makes sense. Can we get to the platform of being fully liberated and associating Krishna in this body? It means you can, but it's done through meditation. Prabhupada mentions it, that the general thing is this, means basically have, three platforms. I mean, let's say two. One is that from this body you go to Gokul, and from Gokul you go back to Godhead. Because Gokul and back to Godhead is the same. Basically, it's the difference between, what is it? You say manifest and unmanifest? Okay, what's manifest and unmanifest? Prakat and aprakat. So, as what we would say, Goloka is aprakat. And what's here, this is prakat, it's manifest. And within what's manifest, then you have what you may see and not see. Well, actually, it's not, because even here, what we don't see, like Lord Chaitanya's pastimes are going on now, are aprakat. They're the same as what goes on in Goloka. But what manifests for us to see, that's called prakat. So, we can join either the prakat lila or, we can join that prakat lila, that manifest pastime, and then in that spiritual body, then we can become trained in how to serve in our, whatever is our natural capacity in the spiritual world. Then once that's perfected, then we go back to the aprakat pastime. Now, if one is diligent in one's devotional service, so that one may have advanced to a more mature stage within this body, one can come to the point where one can, through meditation, enter that aprakat lila, and then in meditation, in one's actual spiritual form, be engaged in the pastimes. But you'll come and go, and that will be seen like that. And so when you go and you don't come back, that's when the residents there figure you're trained nicely, and their point is, why go back? You just stay. So over here, that will be called death. But for them, it's that you just didn't leave. Otherwise, you keep coming and going and coming and going. You keep showing up, and then you take part with them, and then you leave again. That's why you see, like in Raghunath Das Goswami's in the Manasiksha, he offers his obeisances to the eternal associates and those who, says the residents of Vrindavan, those who are the associates and those who are there by meditation. So that's the point. So that meditation starts from the Uttam platform. You have to be liberated to do it, because you can't have two bodies functioning at once. You either have to be in your spiritual or in the material. So that's what happens, is the sadhaka leaves the material, enters the spiritual, performs a service there, then comes back into the material. But someone who's coming from there, they're always in that, and they simply add this because they can expand. You know, so it's a different concept. Does that make some sense? So that's what Prabhupada says. Generally, the principle is you leave the body here, then go to wherever the Lord is performing his pastimes in the material world, you know, in the prakat pastimes. Then, after that, then you go to Goloka. But those who have perfected their devotional service and come to the platform of prema while in this body through meditation, then they go direct, because they've already done. The point is you have to go through the prakat pastimes. But they've already done it by meditation. You know, it's just like you have to do your degree, then you can go on to master's and the PhD, but some do more work. So from their bachelor's, they go straight to PhD, because they already did the master's work in their bachelor's. So it's the same, that you've already done that aspect of your development. Or if someone's only partially finished that, then they definitely go to that place, and they only have that little bit left in them. But in any case, prema is gained in the prakat pastimes. It's not gained in the aprakat. Like that, because aprakat means prema. So if it's anything less than prema, it has to be within the sphere of the within the material realm. It has to be where the Lord is performing his manifest pastime. Because that's the only place you can have someone who doesn't have prema. Does that make sense? Like that. And one must always, to avoid the next question, is jiva is tatasta, means it's marginal. Means we are manifest with inherent love for Krishna, but it's not manifest. Does that make sense? Like the child is born with the inherent nature to have affection for the mother and father, but until it starts to interact with the mother and father, that inherent love doesn't manifest. It's born in a neutral state. Does that make sense? So the soul manifests in a neutral state, but it has its inherent natural rasa with Krishna. So if we move in that direction, then we're called nitya siddha. And if we don't move in that direction, we fall from the prakat pastimes into the material world, and then we're called nitya bhaga. Does that make sense? So we always have to remember is, we are who we are. We are created. It means whatever, we're created in the material world. We're eternal. But our purpose is we are Tathasta Shakti, we are Satyadananda, we are servants of the servants. That's who we are. If we do that, it works. Right? Like if you use a car for driving rather than to open cans, it works well. So the same way we know who we are, that's self-realization. We know who we are, we're serving the servant. And we're going to be happy by serving. Authority, then it works. Is that okay? Yeah. Anything else? So end here. Dhritaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jagannatha Gaur Vrindavan ki.
So, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami ki,